Welcome back to Research Unpacked from the Informed Performance Podcast. My name is Dylan Carmody, and I'm a physical therapist and strength and conditioning coach from the U.S. On today's show, we have Kate Young, and we'll be describing her research around all things complexity and return to sport decision making. We hope you enjoy the show.
Today's episode of the Informed Performance Podcast has been sponsored by Vald Performance, makers of the Nord Board. The Nord Board has become the gold standard for assessing field-based hamstring strength. By combining advanced sensors, real-time data visualizations, and cloud analytics, the Nord Board helps practitioners to accurately measure, monitor, and train individuals' hamstring strength or imbalances. To learn more about the Nord Board, visit our sponsor, VoldPerformance.com.
Kate, welcome to the podcast.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I'm really excited to, you know, dive into this conversation with you just because, you know, return to sport decision making, complexity science, all these areas have been kind of, you know, building over the last couple of years, especially within the sports rehab worlds. And so I think that this will be a really fun conversation just to, you know, hear the thoughts, perspectives, and kind of research from a professional such as yourself. So I'm really excited. But before we dive too far into it, would you mind just giving the listeners a brief intro to yourself for those who maybe haven't heard about you just yet?
All right, cool. So I have just recently completed my PhD at Victoria University in Melbourne. With the topic developing methodologies to improve return to play decisions with a complex systems approach. So I had this idea with the PhD because I worked as a physiotherapist for elite athletes in Hong Kong. And then I came across a problem is we're collecting too much data and things are getting too complicated or complex. So I was thinking, how could I actually make better decisions? Because I feel like I can't really interpret it or understood all the data which I'm collecting. So that's why I delve into this topic and then touching on to how the use of, say, data analytics, data science could help us to make a better decisions in return to play. So right now I am working in the Center for Data Science in the School of Mathematical Science at the Queensland University of Technology, QUT. So it's really cool because it feels like I move on to a school of mathematical science, but I'm probably the only one who can't really do calculus on the floor because I'm working with a lot of statisticians, mathematicians, and they are just like the lots of brilliant minds there. So they're looking at problems not just in sports, but say also in ecology, with the Great Barrier Reef, in terms of health. They also do some very interesting studies with, say, sports performance. For example, my supervisor, Paul Wu, he's a statistician, and he was looking at a 4x100-meter swimming relay. How should we decide the order of the swimmers? Who go first? Who should go last? Or what's the pacing strategy for, say, paddlers, kayak? Or even we have been some discussions about how we can use generative AI to create some new tricks for freestyle competitions and etc. So right now I'm that role, very interesting. But at the same time, I also consult for a football club in Hong Kong, as in soccer, and as a director of performance and medical innovations in Hong Kong, where I lead the sports science and medical team. And then we look for ways to improve practice, either by research or looking at how we can develop systems in terms of on the operation side. For example, we've been spending the last couple of months looking at how we can develop return-to-play systems and developing protocols for the football club. So that's pretty much it.
That sounds awesome. And it seems like you have a really great mix of both working in the applied domain as well as still having a lot of experts that you work with from a research perspective, as well as, you know, from lecturing and all those sorts of things. And so sounds like a, I guess, a sports science nerd's dream scenario in my head.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
I would love to just kind of start things off today, just from an idea in terms of defining terms, right? If we're going to be talking about complexity, complicated, you know, nonlinear, all these sorts of different types of terms within research, we want to make sure that we're defining them properly. So maybe we can just kick things off on talking about complexity.
Yep, sure. So we, in my studies, we've always talked about complex systems or different systems. So if I just start off with the most simple term, system. So that's the name given to you and subject or object, which we've tried to study, and they could be abstract or concrete. So if we put complex system together, that refers to a very highly composite ones built up with a large number of mutually interacting units. And they have lots of interactions within the units, and that creates a collective behaviors, and they have a feedback loop back to the behaviors of individual parts. And then I could compare this term with a few other terms, for example, chaotic systems. For example, Matt Taplander, he has written lots about the control chaos continuum, and he used it, he talked about chaotic systems. So compared to complex systems, chaotic systems, they could have very few interacting units, but they interact in a way that could produce unpredictable outcomes. And if I have to make a contrast to simple systems means that they have a few parts, but they behave according to very simple laws. So they, this is something that is easily knowable and it's also predictable. And some people may confuse about complex systems and complicated systems. So in probably in English, we might use that interchangeably, but say in science, as in a general science theory, complicated systems means that there can be a lot of different parts too, but they have a very specific functional rules and they are guided by simple rules. In other words, complicated means that it is not simple, but it's still knowable. While complex systems means it's not fully knowable, but reasonably predictable. And the last one, chaotic systems, it means that probably it's neither knowable nor predictable. Does that make sense?
Definitely. It's interesting to, you know, just understand those ideas, especially when we talk about the, I know, emergent systems of, you know, complexity and chaos and all of these different things. It's a very interesting dynamic to just understand where these terms come from and how they best apply in terms of, you know, what we're doing from a return to sport decision making standpoint. Before we dive into its actual application, maybe if we dove into just a couple other terms that people may be familiar with in terms of hearing, but rather maybe not have a really good solid definition behind them. So what do you guys tend to think about when you hear the terms, you know, nonlinear?
All right. Yep. So there are a couple of terms which is always used to, together with the complex systems, and nonlinearity probably will be the first one. So it usually refers to systems or situations where the relationship between the cause and the effect is not directly related in a linear fashion, which means that 1 + 1 probably doesn't equal to 2. While if it's a linear system, 1 + 1 will equal to 2. So if I give an example, just a daily example, perhaps like I'm trying to invest my money in buying stocks, but doing more research may help, but doesn't necessarily mean I will get more money in return because the time I put into researching the stocks is not proportional to the returns. So probably in sports or rehabilitation, it means that even if you train more, you probably would have a high chance of having a positive result, but the result is not proportional. So that's why we'll say probably we have to train smart in designing the program and et cetera. So that's the non-linearity.
That's a great example to hear, especially from the economics point of view. I think sometimes taking examples and removing them completely from the context that we normally understand them can actually be sometimes more helpful to really apply them. Let's talk about two other terms, and then we'll kind of get started on the application. Two terms that I have in mind are emergence and adaptation. So if you want to tackle those in whatever format you want to, I'll let you go to town.
Sure. So emergence, probably I would say, this is where lots of individual parts came together, and they create something probably unexpected or more complex than we would have expected. So it sounds very philosophical, but it could be understood with probably a simple example here. Say a flock of birds flying. So usually they have some very stunning patterns. And then how they create all those patterns there is that there isn't a leader telling them what to do. The birds just probably follow two rules. The first one is follow the bird in front of you. And the second rule is don't bump into each other. And then with these two simple rules, there could be a lot of amazing patterns created by the flock of birds, or perhaps like the school of fish as well. So that's a good example of emergence. And you probably can't predict or imagine what's the pattern by looking at one individual birds or parts. So if I put in the sports field, that's probably like a fencing athlete has just done an ACL reconstruction surgery. She's trying to go through different rehabilitation exercise for some core exercise, upper limb strengthening exercise, and etc. And then the outcome might be her fencing performance improved as well, because she was able to focus on different body parts training, which she probably has neglected early because she could win with her technical skills. So that's about emergence. And if I go on to adaptations, that refers to the way the system changes and adjusts itself in response to internal or external changes. I think there's a very classic sports examples is about ACL again. So we know that ACL also is like a sensor. So if we say if someone torn the ACL, the brain activation profile may change. And as some of the work by Dustin Brooms has shown, that there's actually some neuroplasticity associated with the ACL injury. So in that case, if an athlete lost his or her ACL, they might shift towards a facial motor strategy as opposed to a sensory motor strategy to engage in the knee movement and also keep up with that balance. So this is how our body adapts to the change in the systems. And that will be called adaptation.
That's great. Being the, I guess, linguistic nerd that I am, I get really excited about these sorts of definitions and things like that. But I know that oftentimes some people may not be as engaged with these sorts of things. And so maybe to pull some listeners back into the conversation, why is it important for us to understand these factors and these terms as an applied practitioner?
Right. I think that's a great question. It's indeed a little bit philosophical. Like when I first touch on to this theory, I can't understand why I need to learn this. But once I got this general theory in science at the back of my head, I start to see things differently from a very different approach. And I just have to say this is a general theory in science. So it's not something new or fancy. It has been here for a couple of decades. But it seems to be something that it's very important for us to understand, and it could be beneficial not for sports, but in different area in life as well. So if I have to say why we have to understand complex systems, I think it helps with, say, problem solving. So it equips us with a holistic approach to problem solving because we have to think about the interconnectedness between different factors. We will consider multivariables and try to anticipate there could be unintended consequences when addressing challenges. And for example, if you go to the car park, sometimes you have the speed ramp to make sure that you are not going too fast. But sometimes you know the car will just try to avoid that speed bump and like swirl the other side. So in that case, it's actually not particularly safe. But the design of that speed ramp is actually to slow you down. But probably the outcome is not always as intended. So this is how complex systems may come into my mind, is that you probably have to think about some other factors as well. So with that in mind, it could actually help us to make better decisions because we understand that how different parts of a system interact. So we will know that what kind of information that we might need to make informed decisions. So that probably apply not just to sports, but to other, say, finance, to other ecology, and etc. And last 2 points, I think it helped us to adapt and respond effectively because we know that there could always be some unpredictable changes. There could be some disruptions, but there could be some patterns which indicate the outcome. And lastly, because we know there'll be emergent properties, adaptations, it probably could inspire some new ideas or innovations. So I think having that complex systems in mind is helpful not just as a sports practitioner, but also as a human being. And I would like to give two more examples here about why we want to understand complex systems. For example, some of the football clubs, they do weighting before the training just to make sure the players are not overweight. So the intention of this protocol is to ensure that the players are eating healthy, they are continue keeping fit, they are aware of their body fat percentage. But some players might do sauna the night before training just to keep their weight low. So cut the weight down. So these are some of the considerations which practitioners have to consider. And then we should try to avoid setting goals that could affect the outcome, or that could happen at the expense of hitting the desired outcomes. So yes, this is something that we want to pay attention to. And probably the last example, which I find it pretty interesting, is we have a telecom giant here called Optus. So there was a massive outage across the nation a couple of weeks ago. So there was no internet, no network at all, probably for at least half a day. And as to compensate the clients, customers, they're saying, all right, we're going to provide some free data throughout the weekends from now till December. So I think they're doing this, trying to buy back the clients, make sure that the customers are happy. But reality is, I do find the network over the weekend super slow. Probably too many people are using them at the same time. So I don't feel I'm satisfied with that solutions. So this is something that we have to have in mind using the complex systems.
Kate, those are some great concepts and ideas, and especially the explanations you used towards the end really got me thinking in terms of how you set goals, right? Especially with that first example that you had mentioned.
Informed Performance is proudly partnered with TeamBuilder, a strength and conditioning software for performance coaches that is full of tools to help support you in your daily role. Whether it's building programs, tracking workout progress, or monitoring athlete wellness, load management, and fatigue, they've got you covered. Head to teambuilder.com and sign up with promo code INFORM to start your 30-day free trial.
I know that you had worked with Joe Club on a paper recently talking about some limitations associated with KPIs and things like that. And just a little bit on the scope of that paper, I guess a bit of a background. You guys had described, where the state of, sports science or performance is on, KPIs and these sorts of things. And one of the ideas that you brought up was this concept of Goodhart's Law. Could you maybe dive into and provide an explanation of what Goodhart's Law is and, why this might be relevant for creating goals for clients or athletes?
Yeah, of course. So I think we all probably have heard of the Goodhart's Law. So basically it says that when a measure becomes a target, it ceases to be a good measure. So that's the key concept about this law. And in our paper, Selection of Key Performance Indicators for Your Sport and Program, we proposed a different approach to selecting KPI. The main concern was that we don't want people just to set the KPI for the sake of setting a KPI, but neglecting the fact that the other potential side effects it may have. For example, going back to the sauna example, which I used. So the player was trying to cut the weight by going to sauna every night before the training, and then that's probably not the best in terms of the hydration status. So we have to know that if we use that as a target for the players, it perhaps becomes not a good measurement in terms of the performance. So we have presented a slightly different approach. We call that the OPT, which is a ongoing performance. What's the T? Let me just have a look. Oh, yeah. Ongoing process trackers. So this is the most important ideas in that paper, is to design some goals or trackers that could be has a long-term effect. So at the end of that paper, we have outlined what's the characteristics of effective OPTs. For example, the characteristics has to be long-term, that aligns and commit to the long-term goals that it takes to, say, achieve the vision as a team. And some other characteristics would be prevention of the good health loss. So that's to develop some anti-goals. So, for example, if the athletes have to get up early to attend a mandatory team recovery session the day after a match or competition, that might actually compromise their sleep and ironically probably their recovery and their physical development. So these are something that we have to keep in mind when we're trying to design our KPIs or OPTs. But yeah, Joe and Sean, they have done an amazing job in leading this paper, and they have a lot of experience to share as well.
That's great. And I appreciate you sharing some of the insights from that paper as well. I think it was a great, I don't know, just a new perspective that I really enjoyed when I was reading it. But I guess getting back on track a little bit more in terms of, you know, this whole concept of complexity and decision-making, I'll just be pretty general here and let you take this question and roll with it however you'd like. But how can we make better return-to-play decisions?
All right. That is a big question. And I spent almost like 4 years just to investigate how do we make better decisions. So some of the principles that we have to consider is probably like complex systems, obviously, and then how and shared decision makings. So if I put it in the framework, which I had in the paper, so steps for making a good return to play decisions includes zooming in to think about what are the tests that we should do? How many tests to do? Because we have a limitation in terms of time and resources, and also acknowledge the fact that it's impossible to test every factor that could affect the return to play, and also acknowledge the limitations of the tests that we selected. So that will be step number one, what to do, what kind of tests to do, like zooming into the problem. And then the second one would be how to think, just zooming out of our thought process and then just probably going through the checklist. Have we done all the tests that we want to do? Have we covered different elements that we find it important for this clinical case? And perhaps to acknowledge that there could be bias when we make the decisions. So how do we actually, we call it the bias, how do we reduce the risk of having negative impacts from cognitive biases? That could be perhaps, say, shared decision making. So that would be the third step. The third step would be contribute to shared decision making. Just having a soundboard, have the ideas bounce between, say, the coaching staff, the athletes, and just work as a team to make sure that we are making the decisions together. So I'm sure a lot of us will be contributing to shared decisions making already. But my concept or my key framework is to introduce the idea of zooming in first, selecting the number of tests that we should do, and then zooming out again to identify how we think, what are the biases, how do we mitigate those biases, reduce the negative impacts, and then contribute to the shared decision-making. So that would be like a three-step approach to making that decisions.
That's great. I think, you know, just as we have talked about in terms of the necessity of complexity, in terms of understanding these sorts of things, we also kind of conversely need to understand the complexity or the necessity, excuse me, of simplicity in terms of, you know, being somewhat reductionist and creating a model and creating a framework to then be able to help drive better decisions from that. I think that's super important to be able to acknowledge, I guess, both sides of the same coin. But using something like a model or a framework like you're proposing is going to have some inherent, you know, drawbacks, right? Can you maybe discuss some of the benefits as well as drawbacks of using certain algorithms or frameworks in decision-making for sport?
Yeah, well, those are great questions. I've been looking at how we can develop decision support systems. And then while I'm trying to look at how we can develop such systems, I also came across the limitations of using algorithms for decision-making sports. So probably I would say the benefits of, say, using algorithms or data science to support decision-making is we can make a more objective decision-making because we are really looking at the numbers. We are looking at the data that we have collected rather than a very subjective opinion. So that would take the guesstimation away. And then probably we'll have improved it analyzed as well, because we are using, say, computers to help us analyze the data, integrate different factors, and then give us an outcome. However, I do find that the major drawback about using these kind of support systems for decision making is there's a lack of the human element in it. And I would say that there's still lots of information that has not been captured by our model. And that's why sometimes the gut feeling or the intuition of, say, clinicians would be coming in handy. That's because a lot of information has not been captured by our model. For example, if I ask, hey, Dylan, how are you doing? And then I ask you to fill in a form about, say, your readiness to train today. You might give me a perfect score, say, 10 out of 10, you're fully ready to train today. But then if I actually speak to you, I will feel like, oh, Dylan feels like a bit tired today. There's something going on and that's not reflected from the form, from the wellness report form that he has filled in. So I was trying to have a conversation with Dylan and say, oh, is there something holding you back? Or is there some other issues? So that's a human nature and that's a human element that could actually inform our decision-making. And a lot of times the systems may not be able to capture all these kind of elements. So that's why I feel like different decision support systems or algorithms, they can help us to consolidate information, provide us with the probability of, say, the outcome, but perhaps should not, or perhaps will never replace human beings in making important decisions in return to play. So I would say that it's always a data-informed decision-making rather than a really data-driven decision-making. That's point which probably some of the conclusions which I've got after doing my PhD.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, talking about this idea of, you know, data informed versus, you know, data led, it leads us, I think, pretty well into this next topic in terms of understanding this at least newer concept to myself, not necessarily newer concept in terms of the theories of complexity or economics or, you know, working in sports, but this idea of expected utility theory, right? And understanding, you know, what it really is and how it really relates to sports rehabilitation, decision-making, and all of these sorts of characteristics.
Right. So that's a very interesting topic. I feel like it's actually very important for clinicians to know, although we rarely actually discuss about this in our education or throughout our jobs. It's just a topic that we don't really touch on. But in fact, that expected utility, which I've covered a bit in my papers, it helps us to make decisions where we know that we're not sure what will happen. And then we'll try to weigh different options and try to choose the best one for us. So in expected utility theory, we'll think about the possible outcomes, that was the probability, and how much we like that outcome. And then we will give a score for that. Say we have three options, and then I probably prefer option A the best. I will give a weighting to the options which I prefer most. So for example, I will give a weighting, say, arbitrary unit number 5 to option A, while option B and C probably will just be around 2. And then over time, the probability of what's the likelihood of getting the outcome of option A, option B, and option C. So there's a bit of mathematics in there. And the outcome or the conclusion is that expected utility could help us to weight in these possibilities. And that will be based on how much we enjoy those options and how likely it is going to happen. So we'll give a score, a quantitative score to those options. Just because a lot of times when making decisions, we know there's always some uncertainties. So that's why giving probability, or you know that a lot of people have been using the Bayesian statistics nowadays, this is something that probably will be helpful in making decisions.
Definitely. And I appreciate you linking in the Bayesian statistics towards the end of that, just because I think that it's a really interesting process, and you know, just the Bayesian networks and Bayesian theories and all those sorts of things are, at least in my head, you know, in terms of the theories that I have and that I have adopted over the years, you know, it seems to make the most sense in terms of the approach that you can take towards decision making, towards just rehabilitation as a whole, towards training. Just these sorts of concepts and ideas are just make a lot of sense to me, at least. Can you maybe describe what, you know, Bayesian networks are and how they apply to return to sport decision making?
Yeah. So Bayesian network is something really cool that I've come across after reading some papers regarding ecology, say in seagrass. But if I just go a step back, let me just outline, explain what is the Bayesian statistics. So Bayesian statistics is actually a branch of statistics that deals with probabilistic reasoning and inference. So they use the Bayes theorem. So this is like solving the puzzles that while constantly updating your guesses as you find new information. So as compared to traditional statistics, which might be treating things a little bit more fixed and absolute, Bayesian statistics looks at things such as uncertainty and uses probabilities to handle this kind of uncertainties. It started with, say, an educated guess, which in the Bayesian statistics, that would be called a prior, and then we'll adjust it based on the information that we have, and that would be called a posterior. So for example, if I say, Dylan, what's the likelihood of this athlete going to have an ACL? You probably have no idea at all who that athlete is, and then probably say, oh, 50-50. But if I tell you some more additional information, I'll tell you, all right, this is a women's athlete. And then you probably have a change in mind about what's the probability like. Because based on our knowledge, we know that female athletes are more prone to ACL injuries compared to men. And then I probably will fit you with some more information. For example, all right, this lady plays football. And then it changes again because you know this female athlete plays contact sports. So that changes again. And at the end, you will have a posterior belief, which is based on your prior, your educated guess, and then you adjust the probability based on the new information, which I've just passed to you. So that's probably the key concept about the Bayesian statistics. And Bayesian networks uses Bayesian statistics, of course, and it's actually like a visual map. It's like a diagram that helps us to understand how these factors will connect or affect each other. So so I'm working on that Bayesian network paper, and I hope to get that published sometime next year. But it's like a tree, or it's like a map that map out all the relationships between different factors and how they affect each other. So the really cool thing about Bayesian network is we can predict how changing one factor might affect the others. For example, if I reduce the amount of water that the plants get, and then the network will show how it impacts the growth compared to like a normal level of water. And then you can also change different variables. For example, how about there's less sunlight? Or how about I improve the soil? So it will give you the outcome based on the information that you have fit into the model. And the really cool thing is it can actually reverse engineering as well. So if I want to see this outcome, what are the factors that I should put in to see this outcome? So that could be I believe that could be very helpful in terms of rehabilitation. For example, if we want to have certain outcome in terms of rehabilitation, for example, if I want this player to return in 3 weeks, what are the factors, what are the elements that might play a role in having that player to return to play early on? So this Bayesian network's probably new to us in the sports field, but in fact, it has been used in other fields as well. For example, in managing ecology, for example, in the seagrass, what are the factors that affect the growth of the seagrass? Or I have actually came across a paper about relocating a cheetah baby in South Africa. So we know that there's a lot of factors that affect the growth or how the cheetah babies adapt to the environment. That could be, is there enough food for them? How's the climate? Or are there any prey predators around for them? So that's a lot of factors that we have to consider. And then, so that's why I feel like we say as a sports practitioners, we are probably not the only one facing complex problems. There's actually lots of practitioners out there working on different ecology problems or health problems. They're actually working on different complex and challenging questions as well. So it would be nice if we can use some of these models and put it in the sports rehab side.
That, at least in my head, was beautiful. I think that the way in which you kind of tied those pieces together really resonated with, just the way that, I think sports practitioners can view the world in terms of appreciating these different, statistics building into different networks and understanding the factors that there's going to be different areas that are within your control that you can modify and change to help improve an outcome. And there's going to be factors that may not. And it's important to, be able to weight both of those and understand the interaction of those variables together. From a perspective on kind of wrapping things up, I know that you've already given the listeners a ton to kind of resonate with and think about as they kind of apply this to their own practice. But a lot of our discussions and conversations today have been kind of surrounding your paper specifically on, the characteristics of complex systems in sports injury rehabilitation. A lot of times when individuals like myself without a PhD background or things like that will read a paper, they don't often take away the exact things that the researcher maybe wanted them to take away just because everybody's going to interpret things a little bit differently. Now is your chance to kind of tell people, maybe some great takeaways that they can have from that paper, as well as some things that maybe the paper isn't saying just yet.
Right. So I definitely understand that sometimes readers probably can't understand or can't see the same things at what we try to deliver. But if I want to keep things simple, I think that probably I'll say three key takeaways from my papers or actually from my PhD thesis as well. Number one is things are very complex. So it's important that we try to look at things from a complex systems approach. Just be aware that there's a lot of interacting factors within different variables, and there could be some emergence behaviors and some adaptations within the systems. And that could be applied not just in sports, but as we say, there could be a lot of things that that happens in real world that might be beneficial if we use a complex systems approach to see it. So that would be number one. Number two probably is we are not the only one dealing with complex systems. So I would say look for interdisciplinary collaborations, try to work with data scientists, statisticians, just to find out how different models could help us to solve these questions, because it's not just us. For example, we've talked about economy earlier. Economists, they have to deal with a lot of complex problems as well. Like, should we increase the interest rate? What's the outcome? Or what's the potential effect if we try to increase the interest rate by 0.1? What are the potential positive or negative effects? So we are not the only one dealing with complex problems, and I would definitely encourage for interdisciplinary collaborations. Number three is probably having a more systematic way in making decisions. As I have outlined earlier with that three steps, zoom in, and then zoom out and try to make a shared contribute to a shared decision making. So in that way, we try to look for some of the adaptations or biases that we may have in making decisions and just have the strategies to mitigate potential negative effects. It could be as simple as having a checklist of what are the tests that you will have to do if you want to clear someone to return to play. In that case, you won't be missing out some of the tests that you should do, but you have forgot to do, potentially because of the time, resources, availability of the players, and etc. And other things as simple as probably say to make use of crowd systems, chat with your mates, chat with other staff, and see what other stuff that you might be missing. So that's, if I have to keep things simple, these are the three key takeaways from my papers.
That's great. I appreciate you doing that, Kate, just because I know that a lot of times I'll get super soaked into the weeds in terms of certain ideas from a complexity systems approach and things like that, and I'll do the zooming in part really well, and then I won't be able to zoom back out and really like understand, okay, how does this actually apply, how does this relate? And so I think by you doing that, it's going to be helpful for not only myself but the listeners as well. But wrapping things up a little bit here, a question I always like asking people is, given the background of the professionals that listen to this podcast, as well as your background as well, you know, who would you recommend we have on next on the podcast?
Yeah, I've thought about that because just now we have talked about, like, say, how to see that KPI, how to see that ongoing process trackers. I'll definitely recommend having Joe or Sean, Joe Club or Sean Allen coming on board just to explain that paper a little bit more. Because I think that's a very practical paper. There's lots to take away. But at the same time, it would be nice if we can have Joe or Sean to just walk through some of the details, some of the key takeaways for our listeners.
That's great. I appreciate that. They'll definitely be on the list of people to reach out to. Now, Kate, for anybody who really resonated with this conversation or wanted to reach out to you, connect with you in any way, what would be the best way for them to do that?
So I'm not like super active on social media, but my Twitter handle would be Kate Yong One, so they can reach me there, or just feel free to pop me emails regarding any questions about complex systems or decision making in sports. So my email is kate.yong@gmail.com. They should be able to reach me.
Awesome. Kate, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate your time, and I think this will be very valuable to all of our listeners. So I really appreciate it.